Hello and welcome to the EDH Retcast, where we're all about Commander, data, and dad jokes. I'm Joey Schultz and I'm joined by my fantastic co-hosts. Up first, he exiled some cards from my graveyard, which according to the rules of Thunder Junction means that he's committed a crime. It's Matt Morgan. Matt, how dare you do this to me?
It's actually not as mean as what I did to my personal trainer. He wasn't very good. He wasn't that strong. So I gave him a 2-week notice.
Oh no. All right. You know what?
Because he's
forgiven.
A personal trainer and gym stuff.
Thank you for explaining it.
Explaining Matt. The joke makes it so much funnier. I know. Let's just move on here from this.
All right. I think that was the real crime that just happened right there. Up next, he's using the plot mechanic to plot a scheme for a plot of land. It's Dana Roach.
In honor of Aretha Franklin's birthday this week, I was going to make a Motown joke, but I've got 2, maybe 3 Motown puns left in me. 4 tops.
Dana, I actually could not even focus on your joke because I'm like, wait, are you talking about at the time of recording or at the time that this episode releases? Because that could be a very dated joke, even beyond the fact that it's a dated joke by the time
I just made a 4 tops reference. Nothing is more dated than that.
There you go.
I couldn't resist the temptation.
Hey,
I think Dana mailed it in. We'll call him Mr. Postman from now on.
That's terrific.
I will stop in the name of love.
Okay, so Matt, what are we talking about in this week's episode, buddy?
So we talked a couple weeks ago about design trends that we didn't really think were that great, that we were kind of, I don't love this. Well, this week we're going to flip it around. We're going to talk about the design trends that we do love and kind of give some credit where credit is due.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to balance those things out. I know that the internet rewards a lot of negativity, but like we don't just want to be negative here. We do want to focus on some stuff that we think is really, really cool and that we'd love to see Wizards explore even further. But first, we've got some shout outs to do before we get into that main topic. First, we've got to shout out Chase, aka Manicurs, for their terrific work on the post-production of the show. Chase, you're such a wonderful member of the team. Thank you so, so much. Mana Curves.
We're also proud to be members of Team Ultimate Guard. It's really easy to recommend a product you actually use, and we all use Ultimate Guard's products. The Katana sleeves are the best in the business. They keep our cards safe whether we're home or on the road, and the Boulder deck boxes are also fantastic. They're rock solid, they're sleek, they're compact, they go into a bag easily, they keep your cards safe. We just can't recommend all of their stuff highly enough, which is why we use nothing but Ultimate Guard products on our decks.
Yeah, and if you would like to support the show, you can do so by going over to patreon.com/EDHRetcast, where we have just an amazing Discord community over there. If you really want to join the Discord, you know, you can also see episodes a day early. There's all sorts of different benefits that you can get, and there's all sorts of ways to support the show. You can go and like and subscribe these videos on YouTube. You can subscribe to your local podcast app, leaving reviews. There's all sorts of different ways that you can support the show. But the easiest way to just to get yourself some benefits at the same time for supporting us, it's over at patreon.com/EDHRetcast. So make sure you head over there, support the show. We appreciate it. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for our patrons. So we definitely appreciate all the support over there. But this week, we're going to give a very special thank you for their support to Kat Miller. So Kat, hopefully you didn't get the black cat caught up in the Madam Web, whatever the Marvel storylines are going on over there. Kat Miller, thank you so much for being supportive of us. We definitely appreciate it.
I'm sorry, Matt. Our patron has a last name Miller, as in like milling cards, as in like mill decks. And instead of that, you went for a Madam Web reference? What?
I don't get your reference, Miller. Like that's what
it's webbing time.
Like we're the Millers. That's the Jason Sudeikis. I mean, Jason Sudeikis grew up not far from where I live now. So if you really like We're the Millers, that's cool. Jennifer Aniston, phenomenal actor there too.
This is just Matt's way of saying he never plays Dimir decks that mill people ever, ever.
Not once.
Okay, well, that was surreal. Let's get into our main topic here, guys. Oh, man, I adore you, Matt. We are going to talk about some design trends that we love. We love seeing these types of things appear on Magic cards, you know, kind of a contrast to last week's episode. So, Dana, I guess, where is it that we're going to start off in this episode, do you think?
So let's start with this one that I think the three of us like, and I think a lot of people are going to be like, what? You guys like this? Because I don't think the average player likes the thing we're going to start with.
Okay.
And that's this thing triggers only once per turn.
Oh, okay.
So like, you know, whenever you play a creature card, draw, you know, a card, or whenever you blah, 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 you gain the initiative or go through the dungeon, whatever it is. I like those things when they only trigger once per turn, and we've been seeing that kind of speed bump put on more and more cards lately, and I like seeing that speed bump put on more and more cards.
So like the new Taysa Opulent Oligarch, for example, or Welcoming Vampire, which are giving you rewards, but it's only happening once. Like Taysa's only making one spirit when you sacrifice the stuff. Welcoming Vampire is only drawing you the one card. I just built Sarah Jane Smith. She's only investigating one time per turn rather than each time. Why are we a fan of that, Dana?
I especially like it when it's your own stuff. You know, sometimes you see it on cards that like it can only trigger when an opponent does a thing, and I actually am kind of neutral there, but the reason I like it on things that you can trigger yourself is I don't think loops are interesting at all. And I don't think they're interesting in that I don't like sitting there watching someone run through a dungeon 15 times, because it is extraordinarily boring. So like, I don't like having my time wasted on someone's loop that's not guaranteed to win a game. I also don't think they're very creatively challenging. Like when a thing just lets you get all of the stuff by looping some effect over and over again, that's not a very challenging way to build a deck for me. I like having to work for it. And if it only triggers once per turn, then I feel like, okay, if I want to take the most advantage of this, I have to figure out how to do it on other people's turns repeatedly to like eke out that edge. That is a much more satisfying design to me than something that you can like just abuse.
Well, and I don't think it has to be limited to just once per turn, even though I do appreciate kind of the reining in of some abilities where, you know, if it only happens once instead of every single time something happens, kind of like Pitiless Plunderer, like that wouldn't be near as powerful if it was kind of toned down a little bit. But cards like Rumor Gatherer or Ledger Shredder, they happen at some very specific times where it's, you know, with Rumor Gatherer, you only get to draw the card if it happens the second time, or Ledger Shredder when a player casts their second spell each turn. Or, and I know I'm going to name another New Capenna card, but it's also probably one of the few things I, in my mind, New Capenna got right. Gallagreeters, you know, you can only choose things once per turn, which puts a cap on things. And it's not to say that they're not bad. Like, all three of those cards are played in over 60,000 decks. So it's not like these aren't good cards that players aren't playing. These are very, very good cards. But having a little bit of restraint placed on them, or at least putting it into, you know, the real payoff happens at a specific moment that you can't be repeating throughout the turn. That's where I think it's such a good job of R&D reining things in and making sure it's not just kind of a runaway, oops, I comboed out type of situation.
Right, that's exactly it. Like, without those caps, it just becomes combo territory. You named Pitiless Plunderer there, and like, yeah, like Pitiless Plunderer is really famously a combo engine for things like Chatterfang, for instance. And so when you cap things at one per turn, it does help make sure that like people aren't going to abuse it too terribly. And it also, I think, like prevents or it discourages a sort of like Edgar Markov or Joyra weather like captain problem. Like those commanders have abilities that are not capped. And the decks are not, oh, I'm going to play these really cool big bomb vampires and these really big awesome historic permanents. Those decks become, let me play as many cheap vampires, as many cheap artifacts as possible to just churn through my deck or to just do a whole bunch of stuff all at once. And it's more about like raw efficiency than it is about like cool bombastic cards. And so when you are capping things at one per turn, it does let you actually like kind of breathe a little bit more. And you do get to focus on the big bombastic cards because you don't need to play like four of them on a single turn. And so that's a nice incentive, I think. It makes me play the cards that I actually wanted to play in the first place rather than feeling I gotta optimize.
Well, and you talk about it leading to interesting gameplay or not. I think that's why cards like Edgar Markov and Joyra Weatherlight Captain, they're powerful, but also I don't know if they're particularly interesting anymore because those are uncapped. Edgar Markov cranking out vampires as fast as you can cast them, and Joyra just drawing you cards as fast as you can cast historic spells. That's where you get kind of those incentivized, you know, what's the cheapest thing that we can just crank out instead of I'm making an interesting deck that's going to have fun in some sort of capacity.
The way I would phrase it is it always feels like it makes you want to build a deck versus making you assemble a list.
Ooh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is the difference to me that really stands out.
Yeah, interesting. And Matt, I'll also shout out some of the careful wording that you were pointing out there too. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy the wording of stuff like Sarah Jane Smith, where she says it's the first time that she sees you cast a historic thing rather than the first historic spell that you cast that turn.
Sure.
Like, it's also little careful wording like that that allows her, because like when you cast her, she could be the first historic spell that you play. So then she would, like, you would not get the trigger if you cast an artifact or a legend right after you played her. Whereas like that little wording also allows you to actually get that benefit, but it's still capped, but you can still get it on the turn that you play her. A bunch of little small wording things like that do help kind of rein things in, and it feels nice. It helps you focus on things that feel very natural to the deck building and the playing experience.
Well, and it's also too, like, there's little tweaks that they've been playing around with, where you have cards like Old Gnawbone, where whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you create that many treasure tokens. So it just kind of, it's uncapped potential. Every creature that you connect with, you're getting that many treasures. Whereas you compare it to, and I realize I'm throwing out another new Capenna card, but Professional Facebreaker, where it was, whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage, you create a treasure token. It's still dialed back significantly, but it's lumping in everything going on at once, whereas if this occasion happens, you only get the one bonus. And it's, again, it's not to say that people aren't playing either Old Gnawbone or Professional Facebreaker, because both those cards are playing a ton of decks. Facebreaker, 150,000 decks plus. Like, that's an enormous number.
Yeah.
But it's a kind of tweaked and corrected version of Old Gnawbone. And that's to say, like, it's none of these effects. It's not like you're hampering yourself because you're playing the toned down versions of whatever untapped potential card you're not playing instead.
I mean, with Facebreaker, I wish that last ability, that activated ability, sacrifice a treasure to impulse draw the first top card of the library, I wish that did have a one per turn cap, to be honest.
It, like, should, yes.
That thing's an engine. But I'll actually use Professional Facebreaker to audible in an extra thing that I also enjoy about Commander design. This is a cool, like, design trend. Professional Facebreaker also incentivizes you to attack multiple opponents, rather than just like go all ham on just like one opponent, because you do get that trigger if you hit multiple players. You get multiple of those things. And so that's also neat. Like, little things that encourage a melee style. I also enjoy seeing those whenever they crop up, rather than just like thundering down a single player. Kind of leaning into that multiplayer aspect. It's just like also a nice byproduct of some of the designs like that. And I really enjoy seeing them when they crop up.
Well, it's also a difference between a combat damage trigger and an attack trigger too. Like, a combat damage trigger, I feel like there's a lot more counterplay. You have to make decisions. Your opponents have a lot more chances to, there's a lot more inflection points they can respond to it versus an attack trigger. The thing just happens. It's easier in like, it's one of those things that's, you like to get rewarded from the thing as simply as possible. But I don't think it always makes for good gameplay when it's difficult to prevent a thing from occurring. It's a difference between like a death trigger or a leaves the battlefield trigger. A death trigger gives you ways to play around it a little bit. A leaves the battlefield trigger, you feel like, oh, I can't respond to that. I can't deal with it. And that's, I understand why having that feels good, but like I don't think it leads to particularly interesting gameplay. Mm-hmm. Another one I've kind of liked lately that we've seen more and more of is them doing things that reward monocolor decks. Throne of Eldraine being the most obvious one recently, where it's something that like you basically have to use mana from a monocolor deck to really take advantage of that card. We've also seen them put stacked pips in casting costs of cards more often. You know, for years, True Conviction was kind of my go-to example. True Conviction's a really, really good card. Three colorless, three white, gives your creatures lifelink and double strike. That's really, really powerful. But it's constrained by the casting cost. And, like, I'm wary of running it in a lot of two-color decks sometimes, let alone a three-color deck. And they've been doing more and more of that, where, like, powerful cards are, they're limiting them and where they can go by the amount of pips they put in. And I think that restriction is really good for the game in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. Can you imagine if Cyclonic Rift, its overload cost wasn't six and a blue, but it was instead like three blue, 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 blue? Like, or
wait, Joey, how did that go? How did the blue cost go?
Blah, 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 blue.
Yeah, that one.
Blah, 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 blue. Or if like Smothering Tithe had more than just a single white pip, if it was just like one white, or two white, even like little things like that can really change how flexible those cards are in like 3, 4, 5 color decks. And I enjoy rewards for monocolor decks a lot. Like, give me things that incentivize playing fewer colors. That way I don't just have access to all of the things and I get some specialized stuff that makes that deck really shine.
I guarantee people would complain about Rift a lot less if it wasn't as easy to cast in mono blue as it is in a 5-color deck.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's, like you said, the Throne of Eldraine giving you all the mana of a single color and only usable on mono color. I also am partial to the Scepter of Eternal Glory from the Warhammer products as well. Mm-hmm. That's a 4-mana legendary artifact that can give you 3 mana of any one color, but only if you control 3 or more lands with the same name, which is going to be pretty hard to pull off in a 3-color deck or higher. And even kind of challenging in a 2-color deck. So like this really does feel like
or just impossible if you're Dana.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. He could like make a bunch of Vesuvas. He could copy some of his non-basic lands, right?
Fair. All right, fair. You got me.
Yeah. I don't think Dana has any decks where he plays like 3 basic lands that have the same name, does he? Yeah, that's a good point, Matt.
I think the least I have in a deck is 4. So like it's not that bad.
4 total basic lands?
No, 4 of a type. 4 of a type.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Nods in suspicion.
That's much better than 3.
But to narrate your point though, Joey, I did have a similar experience where I was trying to, I recently played some Commander Sealed with some friends a couple weeks ago, and I really wanted to find room for Transcendent Message, which is X and then blue, so 4 blue pips to draw X cards. But it has Convoke, which kind of makes it a little bit easier to pull off, but I was playing a 3-color deck, and that was already just super hard to do, and I was making tokens, but I noticed, well, I don't really have a lot of blue tokens in this deck. So it was just something that, like, I, as much as I wanted to cast this spell, especially in a limited environment like that, Transcendent Message, like, it's a powerful card. Instant speed, draw X is, that's great. That's amazing. But you can't really pull it off in every single situation just because 4 blue pips, even if you're building your mana base perfectly, it's not exactly easy either.
Yeah, it's a lovely trend to see more of those. And Wizards, we'd love to see even more of them all the time.
Yeah.
Because monocolor, we do know that they are going to have some very inherent weaknesses to them. There are certain card types that my black decks can't deal with, for instance, or at least that they can't deal with very efficiently or very well or very consistently. But having those things that do reward you is really, really awesome to like give us more of a pull to like go into those territories. And so we love seeing them when they do come up. And another thing that I also love, and I think that all of us feel the same way about this, are not just rewards for mono-colored decks, but also rewards for having a high mana commander, like a commander that costs 6 or something like that. So cards like Stinging Study, I remember when that one came out, which you draw cards equal to the mana cost of your commander if it's in play or in your command zone, and you lose that much life, of course, because, you know, black spell, that's how we love to draw it. But like, it's an instant speed spell, and like, if your commander's expensive, you could draw a whole lot off of that, and that sounds fun. Or the new one, Imposing Grandeur, which is the red spell that is like an optional wheel, but again, if your commander is like 9 mana, you could draw a whole bunch of cards off of that stuff. Like, those are also so cool to see.
I mean, my favorite example of this, I think, Joey, is the Visions of cycle. You had cards like Visions of Dominance and Visions of Glory that you got to do the spell on the face side, but then you had a flashback that costs less depending on how expensive it is to cast your commander. That ability, like, that, it's such a fantastic way to reward players for playing something maybe a little greedy, and with partners too. Like, you can play an expensive one and a cheap one, play around with that a little bit, but still, like, it's a fantastic way to put in-game excuses to have a expensive to cast commander and just running with that and building a deck around it.
Yeah, I really like this kind of thing, and just kind of in a general sense, I like when they make cards that are really good, but they're not good in every single deck. And I think this is something we can talk about, cards that like reward high mana commanders, but I think this also applies to the thing that we talked about just a moment ago with, you know, high pip count on a card. Like, I don't have any problem with WotC printing really powerful cards. We all love powerful cards. I don't like powerful cards where I see it and go, oh, that's going to go into every blue deck. Oh, that's going to go into every white deck. That's going to go into every whatever. I like seeing a powerful card and going, oh, this is really strong in this deck. Oh, this is really good in this particular configuration. Like, that is much more interesting to me than a card that is just universally something that's a bomb in any deck that's able to run it via color. And rewarding high mana commanders and cards that do that, like Singing Sunny, is a really strong card in that right deck. And I love those kind of things.
Well, and also just like, I don't know, we're supposed to be focusing on the good stuff here, but like, I don't want to see more 2-mana commanders. I don't want to see too many more 3-mana commanders either. Like, I want to see a lot more of those that do like flex it. Cause like, I think a lot of players do feel like they look like at a commander like a Vishkal, which is like 7-mana, and they're just like, when would I ever, why would I ever build this? When would I ever get the chance to play this? Just because of the pace of games. But having cards that do actually like discourage you a little bit from playing the optimal, the efficient, the stuff that's just like boom right there, it's so easy to get that underway. Giving yourself like rewards for those types of challenges, I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, variety is what I think a lot of people were attracted to about Commander in the first place. Like, it's a chance to play cards that don't see play anywhere else. And anything that encourages that kind of variety, I think, is good for the format as a whole. Whether it's things that reward you for playing monocolor commanders or things that reward you for playing high-cost commanders or whatever it is. I think that's just generally good for the game, even if maybe on an individual level people like wish things were a little bit easier. I understand that thought process, but like, I think sometimes what we want and what is good for the game don't always necessarily line up. But I think to a degree, I think a lot of these things are those things. They are good for the game as a whole and reward creativity. And I think that's very, very positive.
Well, and one thing I personally think is kind of a nice shift into something that overall the health of the game is going to be better is abilities that they've kind of slowed down a little bit. You know, it used to be you could do any ability at almost any given time, but they started putting the line on abilities of activate this only as a sorcery. And that's something that I think is super healthy because it means that people have to kind of make some strategic decisions when it comes to gameplay. Are they going to be able to sit back and kind of lay around a little bit, or are they going to activate that ability and kind of leave their defenses down a little bit? Maybe are they going to maybe tap a blocker or two because they want to tap something and do something as they're going, or they can't hold up mana at any given time because, you know, you have to put whatever mana into activating an ability on your turn instead of, oh, well, at the end of your turn I'm going to do 10 different things, because also that just slows the game down so considerably.
Yeah, like seeing the new Xavier Sal, for example, which can like do a bunch of like populate and proliferate shenanigans, but again, it's only as a sorcery. The 10th Doctor has an ability that you can time travel 3 times, but only as a sorcery. There's the new Will and the new Rowan, which have their tap abilities to make your stuff cheaper, but again, only as a sorcery. And those are like, thank you. Like, those are refreshing to see. I don't know that, like,
yeah,
timing and stuff like that, that's, you know, it's got a long storied history throughout all of Magic, but like, especially on commanders, I feel it's very important for those abilities to have those types of caps on them as well. Because, Matt, as you said, they do force you into making difficult choices. And they, mm-hmm, for you to get the benefit, you have to take a little bit of a risk. And that's, risk is what makes gameplay fun.
Yeah, like being able to do things at instant speed is objectively stronger. But having to make choices, I would argue, is objectively more interesting. And creates more interesting games.
Yeah, ask Josh Lee Kwai how powerful Vedalken Orrery is. Being able to always cast anything whenever you want. It's incredibly powerful. There's whole, you know, cards that are devoted to, well, you can cast sorceries whenever you can cast an instant. And so being able to, it's not reducing interaction, but it's increasing the amount of, you know, thought process you have to put into the timing of whenever you're going to try to capitalize on having cards on the battlefield.
Yeah, I mean, head over to Archdeck.com and look at our deck list. You will see more than a few Vedalken Orreries and Leylines of Anticipation in my decks. Like, I like those cards and I like having those options. But like, there's a difference between setting yourself up in a situation where you can play those things optimally and just always having the ability to make the perfect choice.
Yeah, exactly. Like when the Willowdusk commander came out and it can like pump things up, but again, only as a sorcery. I'm like, cool. That way we're not like, I know that there was potential for like, ooh, combat trick stuff there, but then it also makes blocks basically impossible for your opponent. And I'm just like, I'd rather just like get the buff, then let's do some combat stuff and wreck someone's day. Like, it's actually more interesting to me if I am the one who's actually put in the driver's seat for that type of situation, rather than like, I'm always, as Matt said, able to just always make the optimal choice and stuff like that. Like, Do y'all remember Khan's Limited, which had the Outlast mechanic for the Obzon?
I do.
The Khan's Limited is my favorite draft environment because of the Outlast mechanic. There's a lot going well in that, but like Outlast, which a lot of people lamented when it came out, can only be used at sorcery speed. No, that's the best thing. Like, you don't want, like, it's not interesting gameplay when it's at instant speed with that ability in a limited environment, but like, it was really, really cool when you are forced to make difficult choices, and that's what allows you as a good player to like find the best stuff to do. And I just... yeah, I just can't say highly enough how much I love sorcery speed activation stuff.
See, Joey, I know a lot of people would agree with you when it comes to Khan's was an amazing limited format. I don't know if Outlast is the reason they would quote it as being the best, but I'm glad that you at least are coming to the right conclusion, even if the way you got there is a little funky.
There's a lot going on. I especially loved drafting Obzon in that.
Yeah.
Joey took the scenic route, but he got there in the end.
You know what? It was a relevant example, and I stand by it. And now we're going to challenge the stats. Stick it to you guys. Yeah, these have been fun, but we got another segment we got to do here on the show too, because there's so much data on EDHREC that we don't always agree with. So let's come right back with some challenges.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. One of my favorite things about Magic has always been the gathering part of it. Whether it's a road trip to a nearby tournament or a big scale event, getting to be around friends is one of the reasons I've played the game for so long. After events, though, I am drained. Even for extroverts like me, sometimes you have to draw a line and know when you need a little break to recharge your social battery. That's where therapy has been an enormous help. Whether it's getting tools to help mentally recover from long days, or just knowing myself well enough to be able to say no sometimes, going to therapy has been incredible for me and my overall mental health. If you're looking for therapy but don't know where to start, give BetterHelp a try. BetterHelp is entirely online, which helps connect you to their network of therapists no matter where you live. It's flexible to your schedule too, which saves you time from driving and being limited to local providers, which sometimes may not even exist where you live. All it takes is a quick questionnaire to find out more about you and what you are looking for. BetterHelp will then connect you with a qualified therapist to assist with your specific goals. And since their network has so many qualified therapists, you are able to find a new therapist at any time. If things are off, it's free and easy to find a new therapist to help with your goals. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/EDH today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/EDH.
So my challenge this week is a card that I've been playing a little bit lately. I recently built a mono blue deck that doesn't have any instants or sorceries, and that limits the amount of draw I can get in a deck like that. So one card I tried about a month ago that I've always wanted to find a home for, but never really could figure out where I wanted to use it, was Illusory Ambusher. It's a cat illusion with flash, a 4/1 for 5 mana. Whenever Illusory Ambusher is dealt damage, draw that many cards. It's in about 5,400 decks right now, and I would wager part of that is maybe the same reason I wasn't running it. Like, it looked like a decent card, but I also felt like there's enough other things in blue that let you kind of accomplish the same thing, draw cards, and it just seemed maybe a little bit clunky. I don't know what I would say, but it just never quite was the card I wanted to use. Until I found myself in a position where I'm trying to find things that aren't instants or sorceries to run in a deck to run cards, and I should just have been running this card way more often. Illusory Ambusher should be in way more decks for 5 mana, being able to more or less blank an attack that's coming in while also drawing a ton of cards pretty regularly. That is a really efficient spell, and I'm going to be putting it in more places than just that one deck because it's been outstanding so far. So Illusory Ambusher, take a look at it, even if you're not a weirdo running mono blue with no instants or sorceries.
Dana, I love this card. This is in my Council of Four deck, which is inspired by Sheldon Mannery's You Did This to Yourself deck. It's so stinking good. And this deck probably... more people than anything ask, can I see your Council 4 deck? It's in the description, so check out the link there. Go to Archidect. But I absolutely love Illusory Ambusher. It's probably just like one of the most slept on cards because people see it's an uncommon and kind of write it off. This card is so stinking good at so many things.
Can I real quick, like, I look at this card and my worry is always, like, if they have trample, then excess damage is just going to, like, go right over. Is that not a concern that you guys have run into a whole lot?
No,
I've not written a situation where like it wasn't something that I couldn't still draw four cards off of. Like maybe when someone swings in with some ginormous like trampling 2020, you're going to be in a problem. But like if you're not greedy,
you're dead anyways.
Yeah, yeah. If you're not greedy, you're still going to be able to very often find that five or six card draw you can get off at while also blocking something.
Yeah, yeah, Joe, you can't always be playing against me, which means other people have to play trample. I'm pretty sure I'm one of the few anymore.
Okay. But yeah, cool.
Ambusher is so good. I agree with Dana. Like you can kind of routinely count on it being a draw five spell.
That's terrific.
And actually, I've managed to at least one time flash it in response to a Blasphemous Act, which felt really good too.
Oh! Okay. All right. Sold. Totally sold. Matt, what's your challenge?
Well, my challenge this week, so I started coming into some more Murders of Karlov Manor decks, and Anzrak the Quake Mole is a card that I see a lot of decks running around for him. I mean, it's got almost 2,000 decks to its name so far. It's growing in popularity, and it's a powerful deck for sure. It's two and Gruul, so a green and a red, for an 8/4 Mole God, and that's a card I thought I would never say is Mole God, but here we are. Whenever Anzrak the Quake Mole becomes blocked, untap each creature you control. After this combat phase, there is an additional combat phase. So this deck is all about playing a bunch of lure type of effects. And it has a lure. You can pay three red, green, green that says Anzrak must be blocked each combat this turn if able. So you have a lure effect stapled onto it. But one thing that I've kind of noticed that people aren't really doing is finding ways to minimize the blockers. So people say that, oh, well, you can just have it teamed up. People are going to kill it. It only has five toughness. So a card that I suggested to a friend who was playing this deck, and they said, well, it's not really, I haven't really thought of that card. It's Alpha Authority. And Alpha Authority, I think, is just kind of very, very good in general. But it's one and a green for an enchantment aura that says enchant creature. Enchanted creature has hexproof and can't be blocked by more than one creature. This is a really good way of A, protecting Anzrak from any targeted removal, but also make sure that you can't gang up on blockers. So four toughness, not super tough when it comes to, you know, mole gods. But yeah, it gives it a way to make sure that you're not going to be able to team up on it. It's going to get the trigger. You're going to survive the first combat and then be able to attack the next combat as well. There's just a lot that I think is just great about Alpha Authority in general. But putting Alpha Authority on a Mole God is just, the flavor here is just very, very strange. But I also think it's just a powerful card. So if you're playing Anzrak, you want to make sure you're being blocked, but also not blocked by too many creatures. Alpha Authority is an absolutely fantastic way to do so.
Matt, I gotta say, I'm actually, I kind of have some pushback on this one. From what I've seen Anzrak players doing, they love to have the lure so that everyone is like forced to block because they give like Anzrak indestructible, and then they clear out like a bunch of creatures at once and just keep attacking and attacking and attacking. I enjoy the hexproof of Alpha Authority. Always am going to enjoy the hexproof. But this is one I'm questioning just a little bit based off of the patterns that I've seen Anzrak love to use that commander basically as like all removal for a whole bunch of stuff at once. So I've got some question marks above my head for this guy.
Mm.
Okay, I'm moving into my challenge here now, and I actually have the listener submitted challenge this week, which comes to us from Nathan McGinty, who sent us an email talking about the card Mandate of Peace, which is only showing up in about 7,000 decks right now. This one, folks may not be completely familiar with it. It's back from, like, I think Commander 2019, so goodness, it's 5 years old at this point. Mandate of Peace is a 2-mana white instant you can cast only during combat, anyone's combat. Your opponents can't cast spells this turn, and it ends the combat phase, which means that you'll remove all attackers and blockers from combat. You'll exile all spells and abilities from the stack, including this spell, Mandate of Peace. So this is just one of many different fog variants that are out there. And white certainly has plenty of them. I think the one that we're classically the most familiar with is going to be a Teferi's Protection type of spell to save us from combat, and that card is so popular, Teferi's Protection is so popular that I think it looms really large, and it kind of obscures some of these other fog effects that you could be using. But Nathan wanted to point out Mandate of Peace being a really tricky one. Like, this is an especially cool thing because of the fact that it is shutting off your opponent's ability to cast spells further on in that turn. But Nathan also brought up one extra use application I didn't even think of for Mandate of Peace, which I really, really enjoy. It can be cast only during combat, but again, it can be cast during anyone's combat. So you can cast it on your own turn, actually. If, for example, on your second main phase, you're going to be doing some stuff that you don't want your opponents to be able to cast spells for. Like, maybe you're setting up a you're going to combo something out, for instance. So this is a very, very cheap 50-cent fog effect that I think is a little bit overlooked just in general, and also has some neat applications even offensively that I think are worth looking at, especially if you're playing on a budget. Don't let the big famous fog effects loom so large that they make us forget about cool spells like this. This is a very, very versatile one. So Nathan, thank you so much for sending in that challenge.
Yeah, a fog with a pseudo make your 8-drop uncounterable in your second main phase, that's pretty dang powerful. I think people don't look at it as a fog sometimes too, because it doesn't specifically say prevent all combat damage like it traditional fog does. But this is so good. I mean, you can mess up people's combat step, you can mess up the attackers, the blockers, anything like that. There's a lot of flexibility to this card. I think it's an absolutely great challenge.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point too. It doesn't come up very often in the Scryfall searches, because if you're searching prevent combat damage, then you're not going to find that specific wording on this, but it does have that use. It's very, very clever. And it even exiles the like attack abilities that your opponents are getting, because it ends it like, yeah. That's really, really neat. Lots to praise here. So again, thank you so much, Nathan, for the challenge. And guys, with that, I think we're going to move back into our main topic. Matt, where are we going next? What's the next thing that we love to see in design trends?
So we've talked a lot about a trend that we don't like is how commanders will sometimes solve themselves. They have some way to trigger their own reward system a lot of times. And so you just have everything's kind of stapled onto one specific card. But we really, really like it when commanders don't have to solve themselves. Maybe they have either the setup or the payoff, and you have to pick one or the other. Who would have thought you actually had to make an impactful decision when choosing your commander?
Oh, man. This is a huge one for me. And it's kind of like, can I be honest? This is actually kind of my way of sneaking in a gripe that I have rather than praising a thing that I love. But like, it can be both. It can be both, okay? But like, yeah. Commanders that are just flowcharts do get a little tedious for me. I want a commander, not a flowchart. So commanders that are like suggesting a question rather than solving their own equations means a lot to me. It means a whole lot. Like the fact that the gaffer doesn't gain life itself. It just rewards you when you have gained enough life on the end step. Or like Obnixilus Captive Kingpin gives you a reward when you deal exactly one damage, but he is himself not capable of dealing exactly one damage. Those are huge moments for me that I love seeing more of those. More of those, please. Give me commanders that don't solve themselves.
Well, by the time this show airs, we will have already seen the new Vraska the Silencer, the creature version of Vraska, who when a creature an opponent controls dies, you bring it back into play if you pay a mana as a treasure token. It's no longer a creature, but it has like whatever static abilities or activated abilities that creature would have had. Vraska has Death Touch, but like doesn't have any innate way baked into that card to make those things happen. So there's also a bunch of different ways you can brew that deck. Do you want to do fight effects to take advantage of her having Death Touch? Do you want to run, you know, effects that make your opponent sacrifice multiple creatures, whatever? You get the treasures, but Vraska herself doesn't have, it's not like it has a tap assassinate ability baked in to give you those death triggers that make the treasures for you. That, I think, makes for a much more interesting brew than it does when everything is just there on the card for you. Having things be open-ended and letting you be creative with it, I think, is just a much better design.
Yeah, well, and a similar one from Outlaws of Thunder Junction, Kellen the Kid. I even got to do a preview article about that with doing an early deck tech, but Kellen the Kid rewards you for casting spells not from your hand, but also doesn't have an inherent way to put spells into exile, casting them from your graveyard, anything like that. So the payoff is there, but you don't have a chance to really set up and enable it all on the same card. And I think a lot of players maybe kind of shy away from it because it requires you to do a little extra work on cards like Vraska, like Kellen. But also it creates a fun challenge you have to actually solve within the deck building process versus everything's all together in one card package.
That's exactly it. Like I like commanders that need a little bit of support that don't, because otherwise it just feels like the commander's the only star of the show. And yeah, especially like commanders that do flowchart their own success, they can become very, very commander-centric decks. And that can also be its own like dangerous type of ruin. It can be very, very rewarding, but it also like when all of your eggs are in one basket because that basket is doing everything, that can create up some types of gameplay that I do also want to shy away from a little bit because I enjoy having those commander ambivalent decks where the deck can actually still do stuff even if the commander isn't necessarily in play to do all of its own things. So like it has extra benefits for that reason too, which I think are just also fantastic to highlight. I really enjoy seeing those types of designs when they crop up, and I'd love to see even more of them. I love that like Zoyowa doesn't allow, like, it doesn't descend itself. I love that the new Sahili, the Sun's Brilliance, doesn't give herself thopters to start copying. It just gives you, like, here's a thing that you can do. And now it's up to you to find the stuff to do. And that's just so rewarding.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's not even to say that, like, commanders that aren't solving themselves aren't popular either, because everyone here has played against a Chatterfang Squirrel General deck. But Chatterfang itself doesn't make the tokens. It makes more of them, for sure. But Chatterfang's ability, it's one or more tokens would be created under your control. Those tokens plus that many squirrels are created instead. So it doesn't have a way to actually generate the squirrels itself. But it's also one of the most popular commanders at this point of all time. It's a super common commander. It's super powerful, but it also isn't finding a way to solve itself. So it's not to say that, like, these types of commanders aren't powerful or popular. Mm-hmm. They're definitely out there.
Yeah, my, like, example of this that I just always think of is years ago, when your commander died, it didn't generate a death trigger.
Right.
Because there was a replacement effect before it went to the command zone. And I remember playing against someone who had an Alenda the Dusk Rose deck back before that change was made. And Alenda's ability triggers on death. So, like, in order to take advantage of Alenda, you had to actually let your commander go into the graveyard, where then you had to worry about someone Bajuka blocking it away or whatever. I ran into someone who had an Alenda deck that was filled with ways to actually work around that and, like, take advantage of Alenda. And it was just a super fun experience to see someone who, like, dealt with that constraint. It wasn't built into the commander a way to do anything, and they had to figure out how to make that deck work and made it work. And it was a satisfying experience to lose to that list.
I love that. That's such a great example. And that is, like, players really do enjoy it. Like, Magic players are crafty. And, like, yeah, if Wizards gave us even just, like, some random Simic legend that was just, like, creatures you control with plus one counters on them are mutants in addition to their other types. Who even knows? But, like, immediately my brain starts worrying about, like, what does that do? What can I do with that? I don't know. But, like, it doesn't need all of the other stuff to then flow from there. Just, like, and also, you can put counters here. And also, like, this, because, and whenever you're mutant, like, we don't need all of that. Sometimes we just need one line of text to immediately activate our brain and get us curious and see what we can do. So this is also kind of my secret way of saying I like when commanders don't have 48 lines of text. But again, we're getting into some other stuff that we've already talked about last week, I think. So I'll move off of it now.
So one thing that we have praised a lot on this show, and we're going to do it again because why not, is the evolution of partner as a mechanic. When it first was introduced, it was very open-ended. It led to some very broken combinations. It's kind of taken over the CEDH space for sure. Mm. But I just cannot say enough how much I've loved the evolution of partner as a mechanic, whether it turned into partner with, whether it was backgrounds, the Doctor's Companion, and Friends Forever, kind of the same type of execution there. The way that they found a way to take the feedback from how kind of broken partner was when it comes to the commander format and mold it into something that's pretty dang awesome, actually, I cannot say enough how much I love the character arc that partner's gotten.
The character arc, I love that description.
Yeah, not since the first season of Halt and Catch Fire have I seen, like, a complete turnaround. And that's a deep cut for all four of you out there who watched all four seasons of Halt and Catch Fire. I genuinely, like, deeply disliked the partner mechanic after the first iteration. I thought so many of those original 15 were very generic and very powerful, and they just led to people mixing and matching the most broken combinations to create the most broken decks. And I for me, at least, that doesn't lead itself to remotely interesting gameplay. And they've completely turned me around on the variants of the mechanic since then. Even with the switch to the monocolor ones from mm-hmm. from the second series of open-ended commanders, partner commanders we got. Mm-hmm. They just have started building them in a way that I think leads to much more interesting decks for me in the way I want to play than that original sequence of 15 that were just generally useful in whatever color combinations you wanted to build your deck around.
And not only that, but, like, how flavorful those evolutions yeah. have been as well is especially yeah. impressive to me. It doesn't feel like they changed it just because they needed to change it. It feels like they changed it because that's what this particular variation deserves. Like, mm-hmm. that's one of the things that I love so much about the backgrounds, for example. It is a way to draft commander, which you need that color flexibility when you're drafting. It's so important to have some type of partner-ish thing for drafting, but also a background for a D&D character. Of course, it fits so, like, logically, so immediately, like, oh yeah, or the Doctor's Companion. I never even really was a big Whovian, but like that immediately makes sense to me. I immediately am anchored to what that is going to do, what that is going to be. It just makes so much natural sense that I just, yeah, it wasn't done just cuz. It was done because it was right. And that's especially what I love to see.
Well, and I want to give just more praise to the R&D team. They took a mechanic that in a lot of minds, it was kind of a failure. And they were determined to make sure like we're going to do it again, but we're going to learn. We're going to do better. And I think it's absolutely just proof that like there is feedback that is being heard, put into practice, and just the game is better for it. I backgrounds are amazing. I love backgrounds just in the 99, in the command zone. And we would never would have gotten that if they would have said, okay, this didn't work. Let's just move on. No, like they went through iterations. They're doing better. And so whenever people kind of get discouraged about the state of design, they're learning lessons. They're not going to stop doing something, but they're maybe going to stop doing it as poorly as it was in the first version until we get something that is actually just great for the format.
Yeah, these iterations are delightful to see. And Matt, at the risk of us repeating ourselves again, which this is a point that we've said for probably like the past year.
Again.
But I mean, we also have to, like, we can't not say it in this episode. We keep talking about it, but, like, we like three-mana rocks as well. We enjoy compelling three-mana rocks, and, like, they made a lot of those, too. And, like, sorry, I know that we're a broken record at this point, but, like, where else? We got to talk about it in this episode. We have to.
Especially if they have a color pip in the casting cost, so, like, they're limited to whatever that particular, yes. I at this point, I have way more decks that are running these than ones that aren't, for sure.
Yeah, give us choices. Give us things that make us look at our two mana rocks and go, do I want the efficiency or do I want the cool thing? Do I want the glistening sphere to proliferate my stuff or that Gatewatch beacon to give me more things for my planeswalkers? Do I want those? What's the one that you use, Matt? The signpost?
Misleading signpost, from Wilds of Eldraine. That one is so stinking fun because it's better than a fog because, yes, it stops you from receiving the damage, but also it makes your opponents receive the damage that otherwise would have gone through. That misleading signpost, I love this card so much.
Matt, if I may correct you, it lets your opponents receive the damage they deserve.
Yes, that too.
Yeah, and like there's a mana rock that if you draw it late game, you don't feel like, oh. Like, and that's awesome. I love seeing that. That's so cool.
Yeah, they've when the decision was made to start making those three mana rocks and give them an upside beyond just the, you know, Darksteel being indestructible upside, like give them a legitimate upside to make it a tough choice. Again, it just comes down to like choices are just better and like making you have to make a choice in almost every situation makes for better gameplay.
Yeah, these are just really fantastic things to see. And honestly, there are probably plenty more. So listeners, you're going to have to let us know what trends in design you've been enjoying seeing lately. Are there any things that we said we like that you're just like, no, I need less of that? I'm also curious to hear about that too. But guys, this has been a really fun conversation. I like that we can go from like, all right, here's some stuff we're like, hey, Wizards, we're a little bit worried about. And now we can also be like, but also here's more stuff that we love, like, and focusing on the joy of it. I don't know, I think that's absolutely fantastic. So Matt, I'm delighted to see more of your misleading signposty kind of things in the future. I hope you get even more of them, to be honest.
I mean, I hope selfishly that I get more of them because like there's just so many cool moments that these types of cards lead to.
Anything to get you to play more blue, buddy. Anything to get you to play
right. that's not the reason, but that's the cure, not the disease.
just the symptom of some stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
I like design trends that force us out of our boxes is really what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Like get fair, Matt to fair. Play a little bit more blue, get me to play a little bit less graveyard. You know, things that encourage us out of our comfort zone. These have been fantastic. So
get me to play basic lands.
Yeah, one of these days, Dana.
Someday.
All right. With that, we're going to call this episode to a close. So, fellas, if our listeners want to get in touch with us, where is it they can find us all? Matt?
So you can find me on pretty much any social media platform at Mathimus55. That's MathimuS55. And don't forget, we are proud members of Team Ultimate Guard. So if you want some of the best deck accessories, best deck boxes, sleeves for your cards, all that and more, check out Ultimate Guard. Just the best out there.
And Dana, how about you?
You can find me on the interwebs at Dana Roach. I'm writing articles for EDH Rec and Commander's Herald. You can find all of us together at patreon.com/EDHRecCast, and you should be able to find us at a few upcoming Magic events. The next ones coming up would be the Command Fest in San Francisco and Seattle.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me at Joseph M. Schultz online. I spend most of my time on Instagram these days. It's more fun over there. And you can find the cast at EDH RecCast everywhere online. Plus, if you've got a question for us, you can contact us at edhreccast@gmail.com. Our thanks go out once again to Chase for their fantastic work in the post-production of the show. You can find them online at Mana Curves. And listeners, we'll be back at you next week with more data and insights. But until then, remember, EDH wreck your deck before you wreck your deck.